Xbox.
Well, Tuesday is book day, and Tuesday, I don't know exactly why this is the case, but perhaps our guests know the answer to this, but Tuesday is the day that new books are released. That's the day where things come out. I don't know why it's Tuesday necessarily. It could be Thursday. It could be Friday. I have no idea. But Tuesday is the day that that new books are released by the publishers. And as a result, that got us in the habit of having booksellers on Tuesday to tell us cool things that were happening in their stores. Doesn't mean they have to arrive today necessarily, but they're there, they're ready, and or they will be very, very soon. We have two wonderful booksellers joining us this morning. James Conrad is from the Golden Notebook in Woodstock, New York. Hello, James. How are you?
Hello. Thank you, Joe.
Very nice to have you on the program, as always. Giovanni Bovin joins us as well, owner of the Book Loft in Great Barrington. Hello, Giovanni. How are you?
I am doing well. Always a pleasure to be here.
Really nice to have you on the program. Let us have you begin with your list.
Okay, so released today, the much-anticipated sequel to The Butcher and the Wren by Elena Urquhart, I bring you The Butcher Game, where we were first introduced to Dr. Wren Muller and the Bayou Butcher Jeremy Rose in The Butcher and the Wren, set in New Orleans. That book was released in 2022. Released today is The Butcher Game, where the Bayou Butcher brings his game of cat and mouse north to Massachusetts, in fact, to the Berkshires. Elena lives just south of the Boston area, but she has made frequent trips with her family to the Berkshires, and she highlights such notable local attractions such as Ashentelly Gardens in Tyringham, Lake Garfield in Monterey, and the long-abandoned and always fascinating Great Barrington Fairgrounds in Great Barrington. This is a fantastic read. I got an advanced copy of it. I devoured it in a sitting. It is so dark. It is so well written. Love her writing. Love her and her sister's podcast, Morbid. And we are hosting her on Sunday for an event that is completely booked. But we're super excited about that. So, The Butcher Game by Elena Urquhart, released today. Grab a copy of that, and if you haven't read it before, The Butcher and the Wren as well.
Great stuff. The Butcher Game by Elena Urquhart, and the event is this weekend. James.
I have a couple books being released today, too. My first one is one being published today. It is Frighten the Horses by Oliver Radcliffe. This chronicles Radcliffe. It's a memoir. Chronicles his rather late in life, coming out as queer and then as transitioning to a man. And there's a lot of present-day things about young people experimenting with sexuality and gender lately. So it's kind of rare to read a more sort of wise and adult assessment from somebody much older. To quickly recap, Radcliffe was a suburban housewife married to a Wall Street man and raising four children in Connecticut. And after watching a biker rally, Radcliffe is reminded of a brief time in his early 20s back home in London when he and his friends, he was friends with a group of bikers, and he possibly came as close to being his true self as he ever would be later to his life. And that memory kind of takes root in him, and it forces him to go on to this journey of coming out and transitioning. And there's a lot to praise about this remarkable memoir, but what I really love the most were his insights into the differences of both good and bad in gender. And from very simple things that we take for granted, the book opens with Radcliffe thoroughly enjoying something as simple as getting a shave from a barber, to more extreme positives and negatives of gender, like after transitioning. He notes how he suddenly has a lot more respect from like male auto mechanics and other male strangers in authority. And he also then misses his ability to commune with women, where he suddenly is unable to like casually touch a woman anymore while he's talking to her, or he actually witnesses a small child being yanked away from him when the child gets too close to him by his suspicious sibling. It's all captivating stuff for this very brave story, and it's smart that at this older age you can really pinpoint with such accuracy and honesty these experiences. But my other favorite part about the book is it has to do with independent bookstores. The first place Radcliffe goes after he decides to explore the queer world and community is Blue Stocking Cooperative, which is a bookstore on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And it identifies as queer, among many other things. But a lot of pre-internet younger generation probably don't understand the importance of independent bookstores for queer people and how they contained a section of LGBTQ books or the entire bookstore was, and it promoted the community. And it was really one of the only places you could go to kind of like meet other queer members of the community. And I would think that independent bookstores still represent marginalized society like that a lot and provide a lot for everybody. But it's nice to read it in this book. And he does such a great job of that, and it's on his role to accept himself. And we're doing an event with Radcliffe in October on Saturday, October 19th. I first discovered him when he was doing a reading, and he's so eloquent and fun and warm that you just have to hear him to believe it, and you'll want to read this book.
October 19th is the event. The book is Frighten the Horses by Oliver Radcliffe. Giovanni.
Next up, we've got a book that was, again, released in 2022, but its sequel drops today. The first one is Ordinary Monsters by J.M. Miro. And this book is set in the late 1800s. And we do a bit of globetrotting everywhere from Mississippi to the kind of underbelly of London, Tokyo, Japan, and ultimately ending up in Scotland, just north of Edinburgh, where we meet several young children with unusual skill sets or talents. These children are located and collected and brought to the Cairndale Institute under the care of a Dr. Henry Burgast, who dedicates his life to teaching and protecting these talents, all of whom are, the term they use, are unfortunates. They're all orphans. We meet Marlo, the young boy who glows with an unearthly blue shine. We meet Charlie Ovid, who is able to heal from any wound. Think Harry Potter, but really, really dark. There is a being that is hunting them under the influence of another otherworldly creature. Your Dumbledore character, Henry Burgast, is not all benevolent. And it's just a really, really good story about connection and, you know, family, found family. And just the lengths that these kids will go to protect one another, even when those they had thought they were under the protection of betray them. The sequel, Bringer of Dust, releases today. I did read that as well. And they are thick, but they are wonderful reads. I highly recommend them.
Again, it is Ordinary Monsters, and the sequel or the new book is
Bringer of Dust.
Bringer of Dust, very cool. All right, James.
My next book is Kairos by Jenny Erpenbeck. So this novel came out a while ago. It was initially published in 2021 in Germany, and I don't usually go so far back, but it did just win the International Booker Prize this spring. And the paperback came out in the U.S. this summer, so it's sort of new. And I couldn't find that you'd done it on BookPix before. So, it's an amazing novel, a very seemingly simple story of a very young woman around the age of 19, and she meets and falls in love with a much older and married man who's a writer and professor in his 50s. And the novel follows a very intense love affair that lasts about 3 to 5 years. But the twist of it is that it starts in East Berlin a few years before the wall comes down, and then it ends a year or so after the wall is down. And the relationship is ultimately kind of a complex metaphor about old East Germany versus the ambitions of the new East Germany. And it seems simplistic to say that it just represents the guy represents the old repressive regime and that she represents the societal change that's being foisted upon them and how she kind of will ignore the realities of like what will happen to the East once they unify and the negative parts of that. But it is a metaphor that's there, and it's just written much more subtly in the novel, so you kind of follow more the story and not kind of have these things shoved on you. But Erpin Beck herself, she was born in East Germany, and she was a young person in her 20s when the wall came down. So you can really see what a unique world she has as a perspective, as a writer. And this novel is kind of a product of that, where her life was sort of broken in two and put back together again in very complicated ways. And the main character, Katharina, she even gets a chance to visit the West before the wall comes down. And it's a really great chapter because she reacts to all the extreme differences, especially when she sees homeless people, which, believe it or not, was something East Germany didn't have. And this is what Erpin Beck does so well, is that she critiques all sides of the case, and she doesn't really critique East Germany or West Germany. Like, she does it equally. And I love that part of it because it's a simple story, which is intense, and it's sometimes abusive and psychologically very complicated, but the novel will really stick with you long after.
Excellent. The name of the book, help me with the pronunciation.
Kairos. Yeah, Kairos. I actually had to look it up. It was so I could pronounce it right.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Sounds great. All right.
All right. The next few are from some new staff members that we have. The first one, Mary, is very passionate about kind of classic literature and also history, World War II history. So we've got Irina's Children by Tiller J. Mazio, and this is the real story of Irina Sendler, who was a Polish social worker under the Nazi regime, who managed to save over 2,500 children from Jewish ghettos. And they were smuggled out of the country, given to families for their own protection. And even when she and her fellow agents were captured by the Gestapo, they never gave up the names of the children or the families, their locations. Just an incredible woman who ended up saving thousands of children during World War II. Again, it's Irina's Children by Tiller J. Mazio, and that is a true story.
Wow, Irina's Children. All right. James Conrad.
My next is Intermezzo by Sally Rooney. So I'm jumping the publication rule a week here. It comes out next Tuesday. But I was lucky enough to get an advanced copy, so I just really want to talk about it because I'm kind of a big Sally Rooney fan. And I find her as an author that she's a little polarizing. I think there's a lot of people like me who love everything she writes, and there's a good crowd of us. But then there's other people who I think don't quite understand the attraction of her and probably will never understand the attraction, but we can talk about that some other time. But this her novels, they go very deep into interpersonal connections of present-day Dublin-based characters. And the plot is very simple, kind of like Kairos, where you can sum it up in a single sentence, but it kind of grossly undercuts how extremely like great and intellectual her writing is. And in Intermezzo, she has taken a step forward from her characters not just being romantically entwined, but she introduces us now to a family-based story. And this time it's between two brothers, Ivan and Peter, who are separated by 10 years. But they're also separated by their incredible differences in their lives and their personalities. And the action is set when their father dies and how that affects each of them different in very different ways. And they share a passion for chess. Peter has left that behind and become a successful lawyer, but Ivan is still trying to make a name for himself in a very competitive chess world. And as myself, I have really no knowledge about chess, and it's been interesting the past few years. There's been a lot of chess stuff in the arts, but Sally Rooney does a really great job of using chess in this book, and you're never confused by any of the terminology or anything like that. And of course, the brothers have very complicated romantic lives that play a big role in the book. One brother is involved with an older woman and the other with two women. And Rooney's trick is that you read the novels and they seem to just kind of follow these rather episodic accounts of young people's lives. But at the very end, there's suddenly like a very life-defining moment between all of them. And it kind of makes you as a reader kind of look around your own life and reevaluate your past and your present connections. And for this book, if you've ever had an issue with a sibling, you're going to really love Intermezzo.
Intermezzo by Sally Rooney, which is out next week.
Week from today.
Yeah. All right. Giovanni.
Next up, another of Mary's picks. This is an older one. It is The Color of Magic by Terry Pratchett. And this is his first book in the Discworld series. So this is, if you've never read Terry Pratchett before, you never read the Discworld novels, this is definitely the place to start because it introduces you to this bonkers world where the world is balanced on the backs of four elephants, that are standing on the back of a giant cosmic turtle. And the joke often is that what is the turtle standing on? Well, it's Turtles All the Way Down. There's a John Green novel, YA novel by, you know, that title. But I believe that's where this kind of originates from, is his Discworld novels. We meet characters such as Rincewind the Wizard, Two Flower, and a chest that travels on 100 legs all across the world. It is wildly original and hilarious in its own way, and it's definitely one of those novels and series. He's a writer that kind of is great for any age, any generation, whether you're, you know, middle grade, just getting into fantasy, or if you're a longtime fan of fantasy and kind of satirical work, Terry Pratchett's Color of Magic is a great option.
Well, good stuff. It's Terry Pratchett, as you said. It's been out for a little bit, but good to catch up. Terry Pratchett, The Color of Magic. James.
All right. I think this published last Tuesday, but close enough. Robert B. Parker's Buzzkill by Allison Galen. This is the second outing for the acclaimed mystery author Allison Galen, who's writing for Robert B. Parker. And she's also Woodstock local, won the Edgar for If I Die Tonight, and she recently had a big hit with her last thriller, The Collective. And here again, she's taking on the Sonny Randall detective series from Robert Parker, and it's a really good time. Here's the setup. There's a son of a multimedia conglomerate who has started his own energy drink company, and he's gone missing. And Sonny is hired again to kind of against her will, because she had a bad interaction with this character in the previous novel. But his take no for an answer, high-paying mother convinces Sonny to take the case. There's a lot of gender play in Galen's hands. We did an event with her last weekend, and she actually talked about how, in the past, Sonny was always sort of surrounded by men, and in most detective-type books, it's a pretty male-dominated world. Right. And Galen really wanted Sonny to have more women interaction. So in this book, the women have a lot more power. There's the take-charge mother of the missing son, but also his business partner, who truly runs the energy drink company. She also turns out to be a woman. And Galen's mysteries are always intense psychological thrillers, but these Sonny books let her be very funny. She writes in first person, and Sonny has this really great wit and really sharp turns of phrase, and it makes the reading like very, very breezy and addictive. And this isn't just for fans of Parker or this particular series. You can really just pick up any of these Gale and Sonny books and jump right in. They share characters, and Sonny's life progresses throughout the novels, but they're all standalones in that way, so you can just sit down and enjoy it right now.
It is. I love. She's amazing, and I'm a huge fan of. I was a huge fan of Robert B. Parker, and the series, all of the series were great. And but now that she's doing it,
yeah,
it's
really great. And I told her I was going to be doing it for your thing. She said, "Oh, good. Joe loves Robert B.
Parker." I do, and I love that she's writing this series. You have your female protagonist, and now being written by a woman, it's just really, really
It really
good.
Has a different thing to it.
It
yeah,
does, it's fantastic. Robert B. Parker's Buzzkill by Allison Galen. Okay, we have about 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to jump around a little bit. We've got one of Kate's picks, Did You Hear Mammy Died? By Seamus O'Reilly.
Oh, I love that book.
This is a memoir about a young boy. His mother dies, leaving him and his 10 siblings to be raised by their single father in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. You wouldn't think this would be a comical memoir, but it is. The author's writing about his early loss is clear-eyed and insightful, but yet he gives descriptions of his enormous family's absurd adventures, and it is just a lovely ode to his father and his family, and just lots of loves, lots of laughs. It's one of those novels you didn't expect to laugh out loud about a young child losing his mother, but, you know, Northern Irish, enormous family, he somehow makes it work.
Good stuff. Did you hear that Mammy died? Seamus O'Reilly, and out in paperback, yes?
It is out in paperback,
excellent.
Yep.
Excellent. Fantastic. All right, James.
All right, I'll try to quickly sum up a couple here. God Made My Face, a collective portrait of James Baldwin, which is edited by Hilton Ells. It's the 100th birthday of James Baldwin last month, and there's been a lot in the literary world and book publishing about James Baldwin. And there's been a lot of reissues of his book and a lot of commemorative books. This one is my favorite. It's based on an art show Hilton Ells curated in New York, which was basically like a lot of visuals of Baldwin's old photographs and also artwork that were inspired about Baldwin's work in civil rights and present day Black Lives Matter and all that. And now he put this together as a book, and he did it with essays, and their essays, also with the artwork, is in it too, with writers like Jamaica Kincaid, Tiju Cole, and Hilton Ells himself. It's really a terrific book, and you just, I would say of all the like commemorative books, this one's like the size of a normal hardcover, but it also has great reproductions of the art. So if you are into Baldwin or if you haven't really explored him yet, and actually, I think I heard you talking about Giovanni's Room on WMC a couple weeks ago. I was like, hey, Joe's talking about Giovanni's Room. So it's a really great one.
God Made My Face, a collective portrait of James Baldwin. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Since we've got a couple minutes, we've got The Paranormal Ranger, which comes out October 1st. This is a biography about a Navajo investigator. He's half Navajo, part, I believe, Cherokee and Irish on his mother's side, but he grew up spending summers on the Navajo Nation with his pure-blooded father, becomes a ranger, becomes a Navajo ranger, and throughout his career, he goes on manhunts for, domestic terrorists. He deals with local domestic disputes, but he also encounters things like UFO sightings or Bigfoot and Sasquatch encounters, and everything from witchcraft and skinwalkers. So he brings in kind of his indigenous culture to the investigations and really looking at it through that cultural lens, while also maintaining that if I didn't see this with my own eyes, I'm not letting cultural bias get in the way of this, but I've seen this, and this is part of, you know, my culture and my history. And so this one drops in about 2 weeks, October 1st, I believe, and that is by Stanley Milford Jr.
All right.
I have time for, let's see.
We have one minute.
I'm going to quickly plug an event which is on Sunday, and I think you're actually talking to him this week too, Shalom Auslander?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. We're doing an event with him on Sunday. It's at 4 o'clock. It's at the Klein Art James Gallery, which is right across the street from our store. So it's for his memoir. I'm going to pronounce it Fe. Okay. Yeah.
Fe.
I thought it seemed too easy, and I wanted to make sure I was saying it right.
Fe.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, Jackie has the best pronunciation. She says it with like real feeling when she was on. She
Maybe
was
that's like, why I can't say it right, because I'm not saying it with feeling. Okay. All right. Well, have a great interview with me. He's really great.
Oh, he's great.
That'll
Fantastic.
Be fun. That'll be fun for you.
Good stuff. That's Sunday?
Yep, that's Sunday. And then just my last quick plug for a book was The Wilds, a novel in five acts by Louis Bayard. It's a historical fiction about Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde will have turned 170 next month. So just to
Happy 170.
Yes, and that also comes out today. It's a great historical fiction novel.
Hard to find cards for that. Thebookloft.org, goldennotebook.com. Find all of the books at wamc.org/roundtable. You both are great. Thank you, Giovanni and James. Wonderful to have you here. Have a great week.
Thank you, Joe. You too.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.